Before we get started with today's show, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott gets some of the best guests out there, so be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to SV Pod now, as well as download and subscribe to The Right Time wherever you get your podcast. Let's talk about Daniel. A year ago, he resolved to stop putting off what he wanted to do, get into information technology. Daniel enrolled in My Computer Career and is already a few months into his IT career. Make 2020 your year. There are millions of unfilled cybersecurity positions in the U.S. right now, and My Computer Career is training people to help fill them. No IT experience or education? No problem. It's not rocket science. It's My Computer Career. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You can start your new life as an IT pro in months, not years. Attend classes on campus or live online just twice a week to get what you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire our students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited and financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so make new year, new career your resolution and take the free career evaluation today at mycomputercareer.edu. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we tell you about this franchise quarterback that I can't believe is a franchise quarterback. We talk about Dwayne Wade and also your stories about wrestling at your mama's house. But first, all right, so guys, I understand. I get it. I do. America love football. I get that, right? We love that. We respect that. But y'all really going to be out here watching the XFL? Like, is that something y'all are going to do on a consistent basis? Gabe, did you give the XFL a look?
Nope.
See, I gave it a look, right? Because I knew it would come up. And, I mean, I'm going to be honest. They play these games on our television station. You understand what I'm saying? So, you know, you never know. There might be a day they call up. Like, this is my question about the XFL. And I'm really wondering this across the board. How much is the XFL going to have to do in order to make us, and by us, I mean people who do my job, get on TV and talk about it? Right? How long is it going to be before I get to work and they're like, all right, we got a big game in the XFL this week between the New York Guardians and the Dallas Renegades. What do you think will be the difference? Well, you think that's ever going to happen? You think that sort of thing is possible? Like, I really, really do want to know this. Gay, they was out here gambling on these games.
Oh, yeah. People are wondering, like, oh, is this going to go away sort of like AAF, you know? Is it going to start with a little rise and then fall away? But I've kind of heard a little bit of a buzz around people, like the desperate nature of these football fans, like I haven't before.
I don't think they're ultimately going to prove to be as desperate as people believe. I just do not. And I guess it's in part because I've seen people try this so many times. You know what I mean? This is not the first time that we've seen somebody try to start one of these leagues. It isn't the first time that we've seen these particular people try to start one of these leagues. Like, this has happened before. I am wildly skeptical of it. Now, the thing I'll say, though, is, and where I would say the league maybe has a chance, and I don't have a great idea about this part, but I've always thought that one of the mistakes these leagues make, and I get it, like with the AAF ran out of money, and so since they ran out of money, they had to shut this thing down after a year. You got to make like a 5 or 10 year commitment that this is what you're going to do if you're really trying to make this happen, because you're not going to make this happen in year one. And the biggest reason that you're just not going to make this happen in year one is there's nothing that anybody should care about that's going on with XFL games. And that's, I mean, people love football, but they also like all the stuff that goes on around football. Right. It's quite conducive to dressing up everything around it. People like tailgating, for example. Right. During Sundays in the fall, this has kind of become the tradition. But also people have teams that they grew up with. People have players that they have been following for a very long time. They have emotional ties that bring them into games. That's a big part of what the success of the NFL is. The other thing about the NFL and its level of success, and you can't lose sight of this, the NFL broadcasting strategy is perfect. 1 o'clock, watch your team. 4 o'clock and 8 o'clock, watch maybe not necessarily the best teams, but teams that have been chosen because they are uniquely compelling. Monday night, you're probably not doing anything else, but they're also trying to give you like a pretty good set of games that you're going to get on the slate for Monday night. But what they do is they really make sure that at every time there's a game that you got some reason to care about. There is no reason to care about XFL football. Their slogan, you seen that in the middle of the field game where they talk about for the love of football. If the only thing they got to offer is the love of football, this is going to fail. Like that's not going to be enough. Cause I watch some of the football and it is mediocre. Like let me, as much as people are just like, yo, I watch any football. And yeah, there's some evidence to indicate that. Like we've seen some terrible Thursday night football games that come on and people watch them all the same. But I'm talking about you person listening right here. You down to watch two mediocre NFL teams? Cause let me tell you what the XFL is. Nothing but mediocre teams. Right, they was running through the starting lineups on one of these teams. I think it was the game that the New York Guardians were playing against the Tampa Bay Vipers. And I believe that it was the Guardians defense. And they ran through it, all the names. And they had this one dude. And they're like, oh, yeah, he's an ex-NFLer. And I looked at him and I had never heard of that dude before in my life. Never. And I'd be hearing about dudes, man. Like, I went through all these rosters when it first came out. I don't know who none of them dudes are. I do not. I did know Aaron Murray used to play quarterback at Georgia. He is the quarterback for the Tampa Bay Vipers because he's from there, from Tampa. And they had him out there. And I was like, oh, that's why this dude's not in the NFL. Got it. Right? 6'1", 200 pounds, not really talented. Oh, okay, cool. I see. That's where this dude's not in the NFL. Like, I ain't see one clip of anybody. Like, think about this with the XFL. Did you see a single person put a GIF out on the internet of some amazing football highlight?
I did not, no.
Not a one. Like, is there, like, I don't feel like there's one dude who shines above the rest of the league. I don't get it at all. I will say this, though. I don't know if you saw this, but they got a lot of black dudes over there coaching in the XFL. And so, like, in some ways, I kind of root for some cats to be able to maybe use this as a platform in order to make this thing happen. Bruh. The Los Angeles Wildcats have already fired their defensive coordinator after one game. Did you see that?
What happened to make him get fired so quickly?
I mean, I'm just saying, man, Pepper Johnson, brother man got a defensive coordinator job, fired him after 1 week. They expected America to be patient with them, but they can't be patient with Pepper Johnson. The thing is, though, to be fair to all parties involved, it is possible that this is a case of it be your own people, because the head coach is Winston Moss, and he black too. Maybe they was all going to get fired. And he was like, yo, man, one better than none. You got to go. I don't know, man. Like, the one thing I was going to halfway, you know, be like, yo, Vince, way to go. Vince, you progressive advocate for diversity, Vince McMahon. Oh, okay. Yeah, way to go, man. Thought you were getting that. No, man, it wasn't getting it cracking. It was not. That dude was out of there. But I just think that we assume every time we just like, oh, man, people will just watch any football. And then we tried out one of these leagues. And then guess what? Then people don't want to watch the football. Like, I just don't know how many times this has to go before we stop insulting the American public and just assume that all you got to do is throw something out there. I do think that a little kickoff thing is interesting, right? I don't know. Maybe it's just because it's different, but I find that part to be interesting. It's a matter of time before somebody get dog cussed with these in-game sideline interviews. Like, wow, you just fumbled the game away. What are you thinking right now? I think you need to get the up out my face. It's a little matter of time before we get one of those. I can see that happen. Everything else. But nah, man. People have to care. And this is a big thing about sports. In fact, this is the discussion around the 82-game NBA season. It's like, what is there for people to care about? You could say that there's some allure of gambling and maybe people are going to do that. But I'm going to say this right now, man. All y'all out there. In fact, I got a friend. I need to make sure he ain't gambling on the XFL. Because if he is, I'm going to tell his wife. But how you out here gambling when you don't even know who play? How do they even set the lines? Like, that's a story I want somebody to do. Can somebody please go to Vegas and ask the people at the sports book, how do you even set a line for these games where you don't know anything about the players whatsoever? Like, I feel like if there was an XFL version of Madden, all the dudes would have the same rating. Because why would they not have the same rating? Y'all don't know nothing about this dude. How the hell are you supposed to figure out awareness for these cats that you have never heard of? Riddle me that. By the way, Gabe, I'm going to tell you the way in the XFL. In case you're curious, I'm going to tell you how you can tell somebody's sorry. You ready?
Ready.
If you are in the XFL, but you have NFL size, I bet you sorry. You want to know how I know that? because I went to a Division II college. See, Gabe, you went to a big time school. You don't know nothing about this right here, right? I went to a Division II college, and I remember that we were playing against Morris Brown. Morris Brown's a school up the street, and it was a big thing because Morris Brown had a player who had gone to UGA. And for whatever reason, wasn't going to UGA no more, and then wound up at Morris Brown. I don't remember the dude's name, but I feel like he must have gotten some real trouble if he had to go all the way down to Morris Brown. And I was like, okay, but here's the thing, man. I was like, if this dude got all the way down to Morris Brown, either A, he got in some serious trouble, or B, he just wasn't that good in the first place, because you wouldn't be down here with us. And so I remember after we watched, we played them first week, and then we won. And I remember the next game, we played against Alabama A&M at home, and I went to the game, because what else was we going to do? And Gabe, I promise you, the first play against us, Alabama A&M ran for 80 yards in a play off guard. Like, the run play went between the A-gap, and he ran for 80 yards. That's what we was about. But I remember we got the ball, and then we had some dude. He was a fullback, and he was like 6'1", 240, I want to say. And I was like, oh, he's sorry. Guarantee you he's sorry. Because if you got the size, why are you playing Division II football? And the answer is simple. It's because you're sorry, right? If you have the size to play at the next level, why aren't you playing at the next level? It's because you're sorry. And the XFL, like, if I look out there and they're like, look at that receiver over there, 6'5", 220 pounds. I guarantee you, he is sorry. The NFL is not just passing over 6'5", 220 pound receivers. They will give you all the time in the world to demonstrate to them that you are worth their money. Promise you, they gonna do it. So if you look up there and they're like, oh boy, that guy's got prototypical size. Sorry. Like, especially if he's a quarterback. If the XFL got any white quarterback who is 6'3" and 220 pounds, you realize how sorry he has to be that there is nobody in the NFL trying to give that white man $25 million a year. They are out here giving every white dude every opportunity in the world to make $25 million a year if you're 6'3", 220. Hell, you ain't even got to be 6'3" no more. You can be Kirk Cousins. You can be 6'2", 210. They're like, all right, how's $84 million guarantee sound to you? So if you down here in the XFL and you looked apart, you must be sorry. And that's what the league is, a bunch of sorry. There ain't going to be no great quarterbacks that this league is going to produce because all they getting is sorry quarterbacks. So what is the reason that anybody is going to actually care about this stuff? What's the reason anybody's going to look forward to it? What's the reason that anybody's going to be invested in it? What it's going to be is something to watch. And I think that there's an element and an angle to the idea that, hey, they can get some viewership just on the basis of being something to watch. What I don't know and what my question comes up about that is, what kind of viewership does this league need to break even? Because, Gabe, I don't know if you looked at them stadiums, but good seats were still available.
I did, and a lot of the teams were playing in, like, smaller stadiums, like, yes. Soccer stadiums.
Yes. And, by the way, the ones that were playing in big stadiums, they're only open in, like, the lower decks.
Trying to pull an Oakland A's on everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I can't blame them, right? I mean, they're not going to get 80,000 people there. So there's no point in selling them cheap. You know what? The big reason why there's no point in selling them cheap seats there? Because the whole crowd will be in the cheap seats. Right? Like, everybody, it's the XFL, $10, I'm here. Everybody going to be up there. They're going to be like, hey, man, can y'all come down? You know, come a little lower. Like it's really not good. Not good for television to be down there. But I need to know, what kind of viewership and attendance do they need for this to be something that breaks even? Because let's say, like, they got 3.3 million for the first game that came on. That's the highest number that they're going to do this year. By the end of the season, the number is probably going to be very low. If the number is very low by the end of the year, I don't think that means you pack up your tent and go. I think that means you come back next year. Like, you got to be willing to fight through that stuff in order to make it happen. Something like this, if it's going to work, is not going to yield immediate returns. But remember, big reason why the AFL worked. The AFL found a market inefficiency in the NFL, and that market inefficiency was black people. The NFL teams at that time, A, were only taking like 10 black dudes per team, and B, it had to be an even number because otherwise some white man would be forced to suffer the indignity of sharing a room in a bathroom with a black person. I'm not making that up. You can go look it up. Always even numbers. You could not take one, but you might be able to take two. That's what it was. But for the AFL, there are all these great players just waiting for somebody to come look at them, waiting for somebody to come pick them up. And so the AFL then was able to produce quality football. So, for example, one guy, Winston Hill, like the you know, the big one is the Jets winning Super Bowl III. Winston Hill, defensive tackle from Gladewater, Texas, graduated Texas Southern, went to college with my dad. HBCU. I'm not sure that the NFL was really going to call up that dude. And also, by the way, the AFL was able to pay prices to get, like, they were a competitor, right? So that is different than this, which is not a competitor. But it could work because they had talent. The USFL, they were out there throwing big money around, and they had talent. The XFL is not going to be able to attract talent unless they start paying a lot more money. Like, where I think they could get some interest here is if they say they don't have an age limit and they go out and they throw some big money out there at some college stars, even if you only getting those guys to come play for 1 year, maybe two, now you got something I'm down to pay attention to. But if they're not willing to upset the apple cart in that way, quote a great philosopher, you won't be around next year. All right, we'll be back to talk about Taysom Hill, but first, hiring is challenging. But there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. And growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a new game artist to grow her education tech company. But then she switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference. And you can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And by using ZipRecruiter's screening questions to filter candidates, Gretchen found it easier to focus on the best ones, then find the right one. In fact, after posting her job on ZipRecruiter, Gretchen says she was honestly surprised she found qualified applicants so quickly and hired a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. Hey, Gabe, how much you know about Taysom Hill?
Not much.
Not much at all. Okay. So, as you know, I am a University of Texas football fan. Unfortunately, that means I know way too much about Taysom Hill. And I know that you're thinking, Gabe, oh, they must Taysom Hill must have played a good game against Texas, right? Like, that's the way that that's why I would say that I know too much about Taysom Hill. Would you like to hear the stats from that game?
I would, because Taysom Hill, BYU, correct?
Yes, yes, he went to BYU. And I will tell you the story. I was in Oklahoma City for my aunt's funeral. My mother's only sister passed away, and we went to the funeral. And let my mama book my hotel room. So I'm at a place over by the airport that, I'll be honest with you, beneath my current standards of living. And I sat up and watched Taysom Hill run for 259 yards on 17 carries. Did you hear that, Gabe?
Is that a lot?
17 carries, 259 yards. 3 touchdowns.
Is that good?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good game. It's.
All right, just checking. Just wanted to see if that was a good number.
I'm glad that I could clarify that for you. Yes, it was very good. And I remember I said that night, oh, defensive coordinator's getting fired. And then the next day, the defensive coordinator got fired. But would you like to know what Taysom Hill's passing stats were in that game?
I would.
9 for 26 for 129 yards, no touchdowns, and an interception.
That doesn't quite sound on the same level.
No, it's not. And by the way, I just want you to know that the next year they came to Austin, because that at least was up there in Provo. The next year they played in Austin. Gabe, would you like to hear what Taysom Hill did to him that time?
I would.
Taysom Hill, in a game to BYU, won 41-7. Oh, this time it was a mere 24 carries for 99 yards, but 3 touchdowns. And passing, 18 for 28 for 181 yards, no touchdowns, and an interception. Okay. Right. I have the utmost regard for Taysom Hill as a college football player. I actually find Taysom Hill as an interesting gadget player in the NFL. I kind of like the idea of him like being the dude on special teams, and you always got to account for him. And you never know what he might do if he's in like a wing back, H-back kind of position. And he is a great athlete. He's 29 years old going on 30. He has a lot of things that he can do to help a football team. That's like real cool and real nifty. But I look up on the internet yesterday, and I see Mike Florio, whom I generally like, Mike saying that Taysom Hill is a future star, that he was the best player on the field in the Saints-Vikings game, and he is going to be somebody's franchise quarterback. What kind of future you got when you're 30 in the NFL? Look, I'm not singling Florio out on this, because I've been watching this build for years, and you've been watching this build for years, and you watched it build for years from television broadcasts. Like, this is the power of the people who have the microphone during those football games. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Jim Nantz, Tony Romo, they all talk about Taysom Hill to the death, and they have been doing it now for like 3 years. And my guess is they talk about Hill in that way because when they go in for those meetings, Sean Payton talks about Hill in that way. Like, that's my guess as to how it is that we get here, right? But this idea has been pushed about this cat and pushed and pushed, and he has certainly done things that have helped the Saints. But do you know how crazy it is to me, the idea that we're looking at a dude that's about to be 30 years old and people keep talking about, like, the future? The future? Like, do you know how crazy it is to me that I can read off those statistics for you about him having these games going 9 for 27 but running for a bazillion yards and all that stuff? And at age 30, people are still waiting around and holding on to the idea that maybe, just maybe, one day he'll get to be a that he'll be a quarterback. And not just hanging on to the idea that maybe he'll be a quarterback, hanging on to the notion that there's a star in the making here. What? And yo, the dude is wild talented, right? Like, I see people during games who have made the point that what Hill does for the Saints is what Tim Tebow should have been willing to do once it was clear he wasn't a quarterback. And I'm like, the part that I think you're missing here is Hill is a much different caliber athlete than Tebow is. A much different caliber athlete. Like, you go watch the clips of Tim Tebow at Florida, and he was really good. But you come behind that, and then you put a clip of Taysom Hill on there, Hill jumps off the screen in a different way than Tebow did, right? There's just, for me at least, there's just no way around it. Now, maybe this idea in my head is exacerbated by the fact that I watched him do it to my dogs, but still, he's just a different kind of athlete. But that's what he is in the NFL, man. He's an athlete, and that's fine. There are all kinds of places for an athlete to play. I just can't really think myself. I'm thinking of all the dudes. Like, every time something comes up with Lamar Jackson and they talk about, yeah, think about all the dudes that could have been Lamar Jackson if they just gotten a chance. Not very many of them. Lamar Jackson is a rare commodity. There are very few people that didn't get to be Lamar Jackson strictly because they were discriminated against. Like, right? And there are plenty of guys that have been discriminated against, but they would have had normal, regular ass careers that they should be able to have. Ain't that many Lamar Jacksons get passed up in the process, but a whole lot of dudes that would have been able to come out here and run, but then in college weren't worth a damn throwing the ball. There's a lot of those, and I can't think of none of them that people have just let hang out on the roster in that way with a real thought to that person becoming a quarterback. The one that immediately jumps to mind is Joe Webb, who played in Minnesota. But Webb was there to be a special teams player. Like, that was by and large. And, oh, man, I'll never forget this, man. This is 2012, I want to say. I think that's the year Adrian Peterson ran for all those yards. And they had Christian Ponder at quarterback, but Christian Ponder stinks. And so something happened, and Christian Ponder could not play in the playoff game. And so they had to bring in Joe Webb. And I asked the question sincerely. I was like, yo, is there a chance that the Vikings are better off with Joe Webb playing than they are with Christian Ponder? And I had some people, by the way, including Mike Florio, who said, yes, that could be happening. Gabe Joe Webb was so sorry. Like, this is right after that Trinidad James song had come out. You know, don't believe me, just watch. Remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, I remember
that. Yeah, right when that came out. So I was tweeting about Joe Webb. Joe Webb out there like, don't believe me, just watch. I did not believe him. I did watch. And I don't think he believed him either after that had happened, right? But I don't think that ever at any point they were really, really like, yo, this Joe Webb is going to be somebody. people are really trying to push this Taysom Hill. He going to be somebody. The Saints, I think they say they're going to slap like a first round tender on him in restricted free agency to make sure nobody goes and gets him. And I'm just trying to figure out here. If you are an NFL team, and I don't know what exactly the NFL interest is in Taysom Hill, but if you're an NFL team, why would you be that much more excited about a 30-year-old Taysom Hill than you would be a 28-year-old Teddy Bridgewater? That's my question here. Why would you do this? And look, I say this as somebody who looks at Teddy as a limited quarterback, right? Like if you are talking about the guys that you think of in the context of like being a game manager, Teddy Bridgewater is the guy that you want. It's not a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo. Like game manager is not simply a euphemism for not that good. What you hope for in the idea of a game manager and what you think you get out of a guy like Teddy is a guy that's going to make the right decisions and a guy that's not going to make mistakes in spite of the fact that he's probably not going to give you a lot of big explosive plays. So Jimmy Garoppolo, not the guy who fits that description. Teddy Bridgewater, absolutely the guy who fits that description. And I get that, hey, you look at a quarterback and you try to think about what his ceiling is. You can't be talking about ceiling with a dude who's 30 years old. Right? That's, to me, just totally counterintuitive. And by the way, just because you're 30 and haven't taken a lot of NFL hits doesn't mean you ain't 30. Right? That doesn't mean your body isn't still going to break down at a similar arc to everybody else's, because in the end, you're still 30. Right? Like, I'm 39. You're not going to sign me to an NFL team talking about, hey, but he ain't took no NFL hits, right? That's not the way it's going to work. So, like, it's so wild to me, the idea that you hear more people talking about Taysom Hill than you hear talking about Teddy Bridgewater after Bridgewater was 5-0, or the team, rather, was 5-0 while Bridgewater was the quarterback. We have seen dudes like Mike Glennon who played in the NFL, and all he was on the field was sorry. The only thing Mike Glennon was sorry, and somebody fell over themselves to give him $18 million to play quarterback. $18 million to play quarterback, and all you'd ever done was seen him be sorry. You've seen Teddy Bridgewater be the quarterback of a team that went to the playoffs, and then for the Saints in this season, when he started, they went 5-0. Why in the world are we hearing more about Taysom Hill than this dude? Why are we not hearing about somebody looking at him? Like, last offseason, don't forget this, it was just last year that somebody gave Nick Foles $50 million to go be the quarterback of their team. Nick Foles, $50 million, who lost his job to an impish sixth round pick who wasn't even that good. In fact, I could argue wasn't good, period. Hard stop, wasn't good. And you go hear people more excited about the idea signing Taysom Hill than they are about Teddy Bridgewater. And the thing I've also said about Bridgewater, how Bridgewater is not the super duper inspiring tale after this dude almost lost his leg in practice and then got back to this. How we're not doing that blows my mind. And you might be saying as you hear that, well, maybe that's the reason the teams are apprehensive about Teddy, because of that injury. Taysom Hill suffered four, count them, four season ending injuries at BYU. Four season-ending injuries in college. And has gotten a chance to hang around and do little odd jobs around the house until he can move into the big room. He is at that place, and people are looking at the Saints and like, yeah, well, after Drew Brees is out of here, we need Taysom Hill. Let me ask you this. If you think that Taysom Hill at 30 or 31 is going to be an NFL quarterback, why don't you think Taysom Hill could do that at 29? Because they had the opportunity to give him a job just last year, and they did not. Was his value as gadget man so significant that they just couldn't take him off the field? No, they had the chance last year. Instead, they made the right decision, and they went with Teddy Bridgewater. It is mind-blowing to me that now they're looking at it, and they're like, hey, maybe Taysom Hill is the future, and maybe Sean Payton's got some offense he's been scribbling up, coming up with, trying to conceive of, right? This whole thing that's going to completely change the game, right? Maybe, as the way people are putting it, maybe they look at what Baltimore did with Lamar Jackson, and they think, hey, we can do that same exact thing with Taysom Hill. Maybe that's what they're thinking. But I want you to stop and think about the cruel irony that it would be that the success of Lamar Jackson would make people more excited about Taysom Hill than it would make them excited about Teddy Bridgewater. Bridgewater already went through the draft process where now all of a sudden we don't care about a guy that does all the pro quarterback stuff, right? Now we don't care about height. Johnny Manziel's short, but he's got big hands. All we care about now is big hands. Remember that? We went through all that stuff. We had that, right? So Teddy gets in line to be what everybody says they want a quarterback to be. And then they're like, yeah, we don't want that no more. And then Lamar Jackson comes around and he's like, yo, man, the athletic quarterback, that's what's up. And then everybody else is like, you know what? You're right. Someone go get me that fast white man. We'll be back in a minute, but first, tired of that 230 feeling? You're not alone. In fact, research shows that more than 70% of us hit the wall after lunch. Let a 5-hour energy shot help you leap over that wall instead of crashing into it. Anyone who travels frequently knows how tiring it can be. Whether you're on business or on vacation, 5-hour energy shot can help you stay alert and energized wherever you may be headed. 5-hour energy helps you get through your crazy on-the-go life. With zero sugar, 4 calories, and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for busy, hard-working people. Now it comes in 2 extra-strength tropical tastes. Strawberry banana and tropical burst. They're great. They are delicious and can take you to a tropical on-the-go experience. Try them both, then go online to shop5hourenergy.com and use the code BOMANI to receive a one-time offer of 10% off your order. That's shop5hourenergy.com. Use the code BOMANI. Go to shop5hourenergy.com and use the code BOMANI to receive a one-time offer of 10%. 5-Hour Energy. Energy on the go. I saw a story this morning about Dwayne Wade. We've had a lot of discussion really about LeBron and Dwayne Wade as parents generally. Like, I think they're kind of sort of like the most public parents in sports that I can think of, partially because of their, you know, their children playing basketball, but also just partially, I mean, be honest about this. People really get off on like seeing black men hang out with their kids, right? Because people think that, you know, every black person grew up without no daddy. So when they got one that's out here, everybody feel like, oh, yeah, you need to see this, right? You know, so that's part of it. But, yeah, you know, it's the Sierra Canyon games and everything else that's going on. But, I mean, something more interesting that's going on here is that Dwayne Wade's second child is transgender and has taken on the name Zaya. And Dwayne is going on Ellen talking about his, I guess, daughter now. I suppose once she decides that she wants to be referred to or treated as a woman, then I guess daughter becomes the appropriate term. I'm going to fumble some of this stuff. I'm trying my best, right? And I'm not saying that at all defensively. I'm saying that because there are going to be people out here that are listening to this who I do believe mean well, but then get frustrated because people hammer them on like not getting the words right. But I'm going to mess some of these up, but I'm going to try my best. And Dwayne says here, first of all, me and my wife, Gabrielle Union, we are proud parents of a child in the LGBTQ plus community. We take our roles and responsibilities as parents very seriously. So when our child comes home with a question, when our child comes home with an issue, when our child comes home with anything, it's our job as parents to listen to that, to give them the best information that we can, the best feedback we can. And that doesn't change now that sexuality is involved. And I am really, I don't want to say impressed because that feels kind of patronizing, but I do think that it's cool the way that Dwayne is handling this. I think that talking about these things publicly is very important. And the reason I think it's important in this case is, and I say this as somebody who does not have children, right? But I have long believed that children in a lot of ways are vanity projects, right? That's why y'all be slapping y'all's names onto your kids, because you want them to be just like you, you know, like that's, and I think that most people, or at least a lot of people, I don't want to say most, that's probably unfair, but I think that a lot of people, when they think about the idea of having children before it happens, they have all these things that they've envisioned, and a lot of it is, like, not simply heteronormative, but a lot of it is just kind of in the idea, so like, I imagine that my dad looked forward to the idea of like playing basketball with his kids. You know, like I imagine that, you know, people think about, yeah, man, you know, I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to share all my experiences with my sons. I'm going to talk to him about meeting girls and stuff like that. Like I imagine that for a lot of people, that's the vision that they have of what fatherhood is going to be. And I imagine that it's not necessarily the easiest to come to terms with the idea that, no, this is not going to go the way that you think it is. And not everybody is able to let go of what they imagined or what they thought was going to come to allow their children to become whoever it is that they happen to be. And Dwayne is doing this, and Dwayne is doing this in front of people. And I think that Dwayne is doing this in a context that I would argue for most men in this country would be the most difficult one to come to terms with, in large part because I think that most people in this country still don't really understand the idea of being transgender. And Dwayne Wade is, I don't want to say with little fanfare because it's hard to call going on Ellen little fanfare, but whenever I see him talk about these things, this ain't no branding. You know, like, I don't think that this is about him at all. I think there's probably a lot of dudes out here who are in situations that are similar to Dwayne Wade's. And I bet there's a lot of dudes out here that are really confused and don't have any idea what to do and are trying to, like, I don't want to say make peace, but I think they're trying to come to terms with what reality is and what reality means in 2020. And I bet a dude like Dwayne Wade being on TV like that is really helpful to a whole lot of people. Like, I was at my buddy's house the other day, and his daughter was talking about her best friend at school, and she said, oh yeah, we're going to get married one day. And there was a time, and that time wasn't that long ago, where you'd hear something like that, and you would say, well, no, that's not how that works. Now you just hear it, and you're like, oh, okay, I guess we'll see how that goes, right? You know, like, this is different. This is not what it was, and I really am impressed by the fact that Wade has made this decision that he is going to approach these things in this way. And I think that it could do a lot of good for a lot of people. I also hope this. We live in a homophobic society, right? Generally, hard stop. Like, we live in a homophobic society. If there's anything that I bristle at in terms, not anything, but like one assumption that's out there that I bristle at in this society is somehow the idea that black people are more homophobic than anyone else in this country, right? And I'll tell you why that idea bothers me. That idea bothers me because, A, if you look in this country at the political parties and which one of those parties has a platform that is antagonistic toward the LGBTQ plus community, then go look at the population statistics of who supports that party. That ain't black people, right? Let's start there. All right. Then you could go compare us to anybody else. Like, please tell me about this reputation for enlightenment on these matters that our Latino brothers and sisters have. Like, tell me about that. I'm not saying that our Latino brothers and sisters are more homophobic than anybody else. I'm just saying I don't recall anybody waving that flag as being a characteristic of that community that they are advanced past anybody else in their perceptions about this. For reasons that I don't understand, black people are the ones who are assumed to be the ones who are the homophobes, right? Apparently everybody else got this figured out except for black people. Now, if you wanted a question to research and figure this out, then you might get some correlations. If I had to guess, maybe if you looked for a correlation to religious fundamentalism, you might find your answer and you might find some overlap. But there's nothing inherently more homophobic about black people than anybody else, from what I can tell. And if you could show me some actual evidence of this, I might be inclined to listen. But I've never seen it, and the logic doesn't hold up, right? But take a look at two guys in the NBA, two NBA figures that matter a lot, and they are prominently the fathers of children in the LGBTQ plus community. And that's Dwayne Wade and Magic Johnson. And I've always been interested, and I've never talked to anybody about Magic and EJ, you know, what their relationship and stuff like that is. But EJ is firmly and confidently himself, and his father, by every indication, looks at his son and says, that is my son and I love him as he is. And this is in a world where a lot of people who are like EJ and who are like Zaya got parents who do not look at them in those ways, right? Who live with a society who does not treat them in those ways. And these are two of the most visible figures in basketball, and honestly, two of the most famous men in America. They're at the front of this. They're doing it, and they don't seem to be asking for nobody to pat them on the back with it. They're just doing it. And I think there's something to be said about truly and honestly how these are two men that most of us could stand to be a little bit more like, whether we have children or not.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from Tech.
Hey, my name is Brittany Shamus. I'm a reporter with the Washington Post. I just wrote a story about a guy who used 99 cell phones and a little red wagon to trick Google Maps into thinking there was this huge traffic jam on the street when really it was almost completely empty of cars. He was able to do this because of the way that Google Maps and other apps like it work. They basically track phones that are moving along a roadway and how quickly they're moving to try to determine how bad the traffic is at a given moment. But this man, Simon Weckert, found a loophole in the system by borrowing 99 cell phones, 99 because of the Jay-Z song, and piling them into a wagon. He then had his assistant walk through the streets in Berlin, Germany, pulling the wagon. And he made a video showing that as the wagon went through the streets changed from green to red on Google Maps, showing that there was this major traffic buildup. This is not the first time that somebody has tried to fool a navigation app like this. Usually, though, someone's doing it because they're fed up with the traffic in their neighborhood. Maybe they live in an area that was quiet and neighborhoody, but now Waze and Google Maps and Apple Maps are sending people through there to help them avoid traffic. In Simon's case, though, he was doing this for art. His art focuses on how technology shapes the world around us and the influence that it has. And in this case, he said he was trying to raise questions about the amount of trust that we put into a system like Google Maps and also how entrenched it is in our everyday lives. So Google reacted to this by having a pretty good sense of humor about it. They said that while they have been able to distinguish between motorcycles and cars in some cities, they haven't quite cracked travel by wagon. They said that they actually appreciate seeing creative uses of their technology like this because it helps them improve the technology.
They appreciate seeing creative uses of their technology like that. That wasn't a creative use of your technology. You got played. We enjoy when people expose our weaknesses. No, no, no. It's really that easy to okie doke?
I guess so. Carrying phones down the street in a little red wagon is quite the scene.
Well, the other part I hadn't thought so much about, because I've always had some questions about how exactly these apps know so much about what the traffic situation is, you know, and some of it is notification and everything else. But ain't everybody on that freeway got the same app open? Nah, baby, they watching us everywhere we go. We telling them the traffic even when we ain't asking for the traffic. They got us. I'm getting scared.
The part I didn't know was whether or not all those 99 phones were connected to the Google Maps app at the same time or whether they were just there.
I think that if you check your preferences and that Google Maps, in fact, let's go do this right now. Let's go check location services, the Google Map. Where are location services?
Settings.
Say, I'm in settings.
I think it's under privacy.
Ah, good call.
Location services.
There we go. Let's see what Google Maps is.
Google Maps, see, I have it set to while using
too.
The app.
I do too, but I bet other people don't. You know what I mean? Got you. Yeah, my whole thing is a while using /ask.
We're teaching people stuff here on the podcast.
Yeah. I need y'all to know this.
All right, the second story also comes from Tech.
I'm Dalvin Brown, a tech reporter at USA Today. Earlier this week, there were several reports that billionaire Bill Gates was buying a yacht. But it wasn't just any old yacht. It was a hydrogen fuel-powered $600 million mega yacht made by a company called Sino. Well, Sino issued a statement saying that Bill Gates is in fact not buying its yacht. Sino also said that the billionaire doesn't have a relationship with the company and that all the news surrounding the sale was false.
Damn, he took all the fun out of it. I just want to talk about how fancy the boat was. Here's my thing about a $645 million boat. And I didn't get this part. You let me know. Was it custom made or did they make it just waiting on somebody to buy it? Because I'd be shook about the idea of building a boat that it was going to cost me $650 million to sell. Ain't but so many people to sell it to. Except there are way too many people to sell it to. Right? Like, the idea that you could be like, yo, we going, don't worry, it'll sell. What? What? And can you imagine just having the money? Just having it there. You think when you go to buy the $650 million boat and you decide you want it, they're like, okay, sir. And then they bring you around, they sit you down at the desk and they're like, so you'll be providing your own financing or would you like to talk to us?
And this boat looks less like a yacht and more like a cruise ship.
Yes. That's why you need this. How many people are you going to have on this boat? And you know what that is? That's just having more money than you know what to do with. That's it. All right. So I'm going to tell you a little story about myself. I ain't trying to stunt on y'all. I'm just telling you I came to understand, right? So, you know, like I think Warren Sapp had this happen when he filed for bankruptcy, that shoes, like it was a big thing about how many shoes he had in his house. And he once told me, he was like, hey, a lot of those shoes came because I was a Jordan brand. And, you know, I was one of the first Jordan brand endorsers, so I had all the shoes. But that was one of the things when you list the assets, they list the shoes. And everyone's like, oh, my God, why do you have so many shoes? Because if you have money and you don't have expensive tastes, what you can do now is buy all the dope shoes. I mean, I say this as someone who got to that place. I got his little money. I didn't have no kids. I didn't have no big note to worry about. What was I going to spend the money on? Spend the money on shoes because I got to spend it on something. Got to have some fun with it, right? Now imagine being able to take that attitude and buy a $650 million boat. That's all I'm saying.
Now, when I saw this story, and originally I thought, man, are the billionaires getting in the game of like moving off land and just rolling around in yachts around the world?
Yo, because that's like a battleship.
Yeah. And I guess if you're like floating around, then you don't have to pay taxes. I guess if you're not tied to any one country, you can just kind of be rolling around the world on this super yacht. Huh. I mean, I guess if you own a company, then technically you've got to have ties where you're paying taxes in that given country.
Yeah. But they too good for Monaco now?
I guess so.
How does Monaco, like I need to look up how exactly Monaco subsists without getting any taxes from these rich people. Here's that about Monaco too.
That casino.
Yeah. Did you know that Monaco has more police? I can't remember if it's per person or per square mile, but they have some ridiculous rate of police.
I did not know that.
Here's the thing about that. Ain't nobody getting robbed in Monaco. You know what I'm saying? Ain't nothing to be worried about in Monaco in terms of safety. They worried about the revolution. They're not worried about somebody breaking in your car. They worried about somebody trying to burn down the house.
Have you been to Monaco before?
I have.
Okay.
Gabe. I saw a Mercedes in Monaco that had leather exterior.
Really? Whoa.
Leather exterior.
I guess they're not planning on driving that down I-95 anytime soon.
I don't know. I just like, it was a leather car. I just stood out there playing That's My Car like I was 5 years old. I could not. Yo, man. I mean. Yo, the car was made of leather.
All right, this last one because of music.
Hey, this is Anastasia Tsoukas. I'm a reporter at NPR. Last week, I published a story about a musician who alleges that the Transportation Security Administration destroyed his instrument, but the TSA says it wasn't them, even though the musician found a TSA inspection notice in the case alongside his completely dismantled instrument. The accusation comes from a very prominent artist from Mali in West Africa named Balake Sissoko. He plays a very large, delicate, harp-like instrument called the kora. A week ago Monday at JFK Airport in New York, Sissoko says he did what he always does when touring. He had carefully packed the kora in a hard flight case, and then he and his tour manager stood and watched while the kora in the case went through a CT scanner at JFK and was then loaded onto a conveyor belt to the baggage room. Sissoko says when he got to Paris, the case looked totally fine. But when he opened the case, he says, he discovered that the kora had been completely dismantled. His precious custom instrument is not fixable. And inside the case, there was also a TSA notification saying that agents had inspected his property. But a TSA spokesperson told me that its agents never opened the case. That person said that the TSA has distributed many millions of those inspection notes over the years and said anyone could have put the note in there. Balake Sissoko's manager told me they believe the TSA statement is, quote, a full lie.
Here's my question. If they didn't open the case, why not? Isn't that what they're supposed to do?
Yeah, has this happened to you before where you've gotten one of those slips in your luggage?
Yeah, I don't really check bags like that, but I have had that. Freddie Gibbs once posted one where he had the TSA slip in his bag, and it says some version of come on. I don't remember what came after, but there was also like an ounce of weed in his bag. He's a rapper. His boss don't care about that kind of stuff. I don't want to be mean to the TSA people, right? Because, you know, everybody out here working, that's just what it is. You know, totally get that. At the same time, I open up that case and something broke in there. Nah, man, I got to talk to the manager. If I'm that dude, I'm jumping on the plane right back to JFK. I don't know what somebody going to do about it, but somebody going to do it. It will be done. Oh, no. Oh, in fact, that's something I don't know about TSA. What happens if you ask to speak to the manager? Is there a manager? Gotta be a manager. And I would be speaking to him. And you know how frustrating it's gotta be to be on the, to hit the ground in Paris and be like, yo, what a manager? And then the manager starts being French. You're like, oh, that's right. Wrong country. Can you call it a manager?
And it's not just like a damaged goods type of thing where like a string was broken or...
They took the damn thing apart.
Yeah, disassemble. That's like next level of damage.
Well, the question is, how much of this was doing the math on, like, that name?
Yeah.
Flying to France and, you know, something they ain't never heard of before.
Yeah, and JFK ain't exactly the most hospitable place that I've ever been.
No, no. This is not a city of comfortable airports.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. Do you want to tell the people what the inspiration for the social segment was this week?
All right, basically, this is like tangentially connected to anything that's actually going on in life. The XFL, you know, is owned by the wrestling people. And that made me think about wrestling. And remember that people got all kinds of stories about wrestling around the house that normally involves somebody being injured or somebody breaking something and, you know, then maybe being injured after that. So we got your calls with the stories about, you know, home wrestling.
And we got some good ones. Our first comes from D in New York.
I was probably 11 years old and Razor Ramon came out and he was doing all of these moves. And of course, I needed to practice this on somebody. And that somebody happened to be my little sister.
Oh, no.
Whether it be a DDT or whatever the case was, she had to get it. But on this particular day, it was Saturday night wrestling. He just did his thing. And I climbed to the top of my parents' dresser, and I hit her the finishing move from Razor Ramon, which is essentially a power bomb off the top of the dresser onto our king-size bed, my parents' king-size bed. And we broke the bed, of course, on the fifth floor of our apartment in New York. Which means the neighbors heard it, and the neighbors thought that something was falling through the ceiling. Funny times, but the ass whooping definitely wasn't funny.
Yo, that's the thing. See, I got lucky. I didn't have any siblings. I had nobody to wrestle with.
Yo, sisters should be off limits on trying DDTs.
That's what you got. That's what you got. Well, how old was the sister? He didn't mention that part.
Yeah, he did not. So
That's a great, yeah. How old? You were 11 years old. If she was 5, I'm surprised they let you stay in the house. Because they weren't worried about the bed. You can't harm the baby.
The thing about these wrestling moves is, I mean, wrestling is fake. Everybody knows, right? So a lot of times it's the moves that aren't exactly like the cause of injury. It's the resulting fall.
Right.
And in this case, it's like, oh, yeah, did the DDT. She had to get it. Okay. I was like, maybe that isn't going to injure her, but like certainly the bed collapsing or whatever is like, yo, you got to be careful.
I'm really surprised they didn't kick him out the house. Like my brother once said, because I'm the youngest, he said, and I quote, if something happened and Bo got electrocuted, we would become Amish. He's right, too.
This next one comes from Tim in New Orleans.
This would have been about 1996. I want to say it was at the height of the Goldberg situation, so maybe 97. We had just broken for summer break. I think it was the first weekend of summer break. My mother took our baby brother to the grocery store and gave us very explicit instructions before she left not to wrestle and specifically not to use any Bill Goldberg moves. So as soon as she left with our baby brother, we started beating the living crap out of each other, my brother and I. One thing led to another, and I tried to spear and pile drive him through the couch, and he broke his wrist on the first week of summer. Had to spend an entire summer in a cast. Wasn't very fun, and it was absolutely the end of wrestling in that house.
Two Americas. One America makes sure you know about the parental beatdown that they suffered for doing such things. The other America gets off before telling us that. Because I know it happened. Yo, when you a kid, you spend so much time watching wrestling, and there's a few moves that everybody does, or it's your guy, you know? But also, like, you think you know, but those are professionals.
Yeah, the choke slam is definitely, like, the move of choice.
That takes a lot, though.
Yeah, it does. Well, unless you got, like...
And you need a willing partner for that.
Well, it depends on how bouncy the bed is, right?
I don't know how bouncy the bed could be for me to be like, yeah, choke slam me. Nah.
Or it depends on how little the brother is, right? When he doesn't really know better, it's like, oh.
Yeah. I was so much younger than my older brother that these were never things I'd have to worry about.
All right, this last one comes from Travis in Minnesota.
But when I was about 14 years old, me and my younger brother were wrestling around. He was about 5 years younger than me. My mom was in her room taking a nap. Now, throughout this wrestling, no one got hurt, but we have a reading lamp that's sitting on the nightstand, and that got knocked onto the bed. Me and him went to go watch cartoons and, you know, do whatever else. Next thing I know, I go back in the room. The whole room is smoking, and the bed is on fire. Instead of getting my mom or going for the fire extinguisher that we actually had, I tried to take the mattress and pull it outside. And in doing so, the flames just grew bigger, waking up my mom, and I got yelled at. But I didn't get punished because my punishment was I had to sleep on a pallet on the floor for years until I got a new bed. I think it was 2 years before I got a new bed when I was 16.
Yo, you had to sleep on the pallet for 2 years? I mean, look. I don't want to clown because, you know, money tight, right? So I don't, if they just couldn't do no better for you, that's one thing. But if they just let you lay on it for 2 years, bro, you should have called child abuse on them.
Because it's not just like, oh, I'm sleeping on a pallet and I got a mattress on top of the pallet. It's
right.
Like, no, I'm sleeping on the pallet.
I don't know if the video, Cookie Monster, they don't dance no more. But CeeLo is dressed up. They got to act like a kid. They go, Cookie Monster. They tend to make him dance. He's like, I'll call child abuse on y'all. Like, that's what you got to do at a time like that, man. Stand up for yourself. Some dignity. Something. Yeesh.
Different levels of destruction with each one of the voicemails we had. Also, some other ones that we got, people were talking about, like, broke a wall and they got to patch it up a little bit, or like there was a somebody put a hole through the wall and then they put the poster over it and then mom found out later. Have you ever had one of those experiences where you've had to explain away a hole in the wall?
No. I would know that wasn't going to work. That best bet is just to claim the hole.
Yeah. I definitely put a hole in the wall at one point, or a hole in a door, and then had to explain away. Oh yeah, I just slipped. It was at the end of the hall and that explanation didn't work out so well.
Yeah, man, because here's the thing, as a kid, your lies work according to your consciousness. You believe that just because they can't prove it, that's enough. I mean, I slipped. How are they going to know I didn't?
Exactly.
That doesn't matter.
Exactly.
That doesn't matter. They not believing it, they not.
Now, how convincing can you be that the size of your shoulder is the same size as your fist? So, of course, it's at that height, you know. It's kind of a similar hole, you know.
Here's the thing. It don't matter if you slipped. If they think you didn't, you didn't. Period. Oh, well. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to My Computer Career. Thank you to ZipRecruiter. Thank you to 5-Hour Energy. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Brittany Shamus of The Washington Post. Check out her story on a man that jammed up Google Maps by walking down the street with 99 phones. Thank you to Dalvin Brown of USA Today. Check out his story about the super yacht that Bill Gates is not buying, but still check it out. Also, thanks to Anastasia Tsiolkos. Check out her story on a prominent musician from Mali who had his instrument destroyed by TSA. You would be salty, too. All right. Be sure to subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.